You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
On a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650.
God, I love Fiesta Friday.
I do love a good Fiesta Friday.
This makes me feel so good.
This is how on his game Laddie is right now. Even though John Shorthouse is about to join us and he has his own intro music, Laddie was determined, I repeat determined, to stick with the Fiesta Friday theme.
I think Shorty's got a bit of a festive vibe to him, right?
Shorty loves a fiesta.
Probably having a good time in Nashville right now. Maybe he'll go for tacos.
Yeah, right now. Like 9:30 in the morning.
It's true. Morning tacos. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. I've already mentioned that. Hour two of this program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. What better way to celebrate your Fiesta Friday than with some low-calorie, low-carb craft beer? You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Our next guest, as mentioned, is joining us live from Nashville, the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet, John Shorthouse, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Shorty?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Fiesta Friday it is. I concur with Laddie. I think that was the way to go.
Good. It's funny. We played, well, funny is not the right word, but we played some Bob Cole audio over a Fiesta track earlier in the show. And then we were kind of self-reflective about it. And then we're like, you know what? Part of this is about celebrating an iconic career, all the tremendous calls that he had and remembering what he meant to so many people in a positive way. With regards to your career, what sort of influence did Bob Cole have on John Shorthouse?
Well, I'm with you on that, by the way, because I think Bob would prefer us to raise a glass of Captain Morgan and salute him rather than be overly despondent today, despite the fact that, you know, it is a sad day because he was an influence on so many of us. And I'm no different. I think the coolest thing for me as a kid was when Jim Robson would call a game on a Saturday because that was our guy. And to me, it just meant so much. And for those of you who are younger than, let's say, Jason, Saturdays, there used to be one game. And it was at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. And the Canucks were seldom the featured team. It was usually Danny Gallagher in Montreal, sometimes Jim Robson in Vancouver, and often Bob Cole in Toronto. And you got one game a week on Saturday. And Bob, I grew to like Bob back in the 80s as the voice of the Leafs because I could never warm up to Montreal. I was just sick of all the winning. You know, like,
fair.
I was born in 1970. And so when I was really starting to pay attention to the league, Montreal was in the process of winning 4 straight cups in the late 70s. And I just, enough. Like, okay, you've had your winning. I'm bored with you. So I kind of glommed on to the Leafs on Saturdays because the Canucks weren't very often the featured team. And that was kind of my introduction to Bob. And then, of course, he became the voice, not just of Saturdays, but of playoffs, Olympics, World Cups, you name it. And, you know, he's just the soundtrack of so many things for so many of us. So I got this job 26 years ago. I started calling Canucks games in 1998. And I think the first time we worked the same game was a Saturday in 1999 in Calgary. And I don't think I'd met Bob before. We might have rubbed shoulders briefly in 94 when the Canucks were in the final and I was covering it for Sports Page. And he was calling it on CBC. But I hadn't really had an introduction to him. So I was excited. We were going to be in the same broadcast gondola at the Saddle Dome in Calgary, calling the same game on a Saturday. I was on the radio for CKNW and he was on TV for Hockey Night in Canada. And I was sitting in the booth with John Bruins, the longtime radio engineer in Calgary, who's still doing the job. And I wasn't paying attention to what was going on behind me. And John kind of tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around, and there was Bob in the doorway. And he'd come to talk to me, let alone me going to talk to him. And I turned around and said, "Mr. Cole, it's nice to meet you." And all he said, two words. And he said, "Chubarov or Chubarov?" So I said, it's Chubarov, Bob. It's so exciting to me. And we had a little chat after that. But that was my introduction to him. He was a stickler for detail. In the mornings, he always, the first thing you want to know is, what are the lines? You know, he'd ask the coaches. And we've reached a stage now where coaches don't divulge much, but they'd always divulge it for Bob. Always divulge it to Bob because of the respect they have. Because they grew up listening to him as well. And so he wanted the lines, and on that particular night, he wanted to know how to pronounce the name of number 13 for Vancouver, and it was, in fact, Artem Chubarov.
So I know you've been doing the job for a long time, and you've developed your own style and some of your own calls and catchphrases. Catchphrases is interesting because sometimes you can hear guys trying too hard or thinking too much. And we were talking earlier, part of Bob Cole's brilliance was the simplicity and the way that he was able to enunciate just regular stuff and make it sound like very melodic. We're really getting into like the nitty gritty of play by play there. Is that ever something like, you know, did you ever like Bob Cole it up or anything like that?
I do. For those who pay close attention, I pay homage to Bob at least once a game. And that's when there's a potential for an odd man rush, and it'll be three of them through center, or four of them this time, and that's a direct homage to Bob. And I've been doing that for decades. I've been told repeatedly that my best ever work was performed in the Sedin's final home game when Daniel scored in overtime against the Arizona Coyotes. And apparently my best work, and this is borrowing from Bob again, my best work involved me shutting up and not saying a word for 8 straight minutes because there was no point, right? I said scores, and then we didn't talk for, I think it was 8 minutes. And the crowd took it from there. And it was the only way to go. And some people would have talked right through that. And Bob wouldn't have, and nor should he have. And we didn't. And nor should we have. So he's been an influence in a lot of ways. And then, you know, so every game I try to pay tribute to him one way or another. And in 2019, we were told that it was going to be his last night working. And the Canucks finished their season. They were out of the playoffs. And we had an afternoon game in St. Louis. And so we actually preceded the Hockey Night broadcast, and I had a small list of things that I wanted. I was only going to get one in, so I needed the opportunity to arise for me to pay homage to Bob. And the list of things didn't happen until Tanner Pearson had a rush through center, kind of a solo pass. And my opportunity was there. And so I borrowed a phrase from Bob, which I think you guys played earlier on the show, from 1992 when the Penguins beat the North Stars in the final. And it worked out pretty well. I remember I felt pretty good because Ron McLean replayed it on the pregame show on Hockey Night. And it was a small gesture, but it was fitting, I thought, for my end.
Well, I actually have both calls here, Shorty, if we can play them just for a second. We'll start with the Lemieux call that you're referencing that we played earlier.
Laddie, I don't care what people say about you.
Coming up. Look at Lemieux. Oh, my heavens. What a goal. What a move. Lemieux. Oh, baby.
And then here's your wonderful tribute that you did on that night you're talking about.
45 seconds for the second unit to work with. Here's Pearson through the defense. In. Scores. Tanner Pearson. What a move. What a goal! Oh, baby!
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Tanner Pearson and Mario were often compared.
Yeah, seriously. I thought that's where the worlds also collided, you know, because there was such a similarity in their play.
We're speaking to John Shorthouse live from Nashville here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Laddie, you're the best. Shorty, so in addition to everything that you do, you're now an embedded journalist working the scrums. You're like, Moj. You're in there asking questions.
I heard your voice yesterday in the scrum, and I couldn't believe it.
I usually go on the scrums just so I can be seen, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, Shorty was here this morning.
Check. And Shorty was in the skate.
He's working his ass off. No, I was curious, particularly with Casey, if that's what you're referring to. I was curious if, like, in the moment, if he was hearing the fence. Because, and I heard Batch's call, too. We had basically the exact same call. It was like, the fans are chanting, let's go, Casey. And the chant didn't work.
What did Casey say? I didn't hear that part of the scrum with you. I heard you when you were asking.
He said he could hear it. He said he could hear it clear as day. Like, he knew exactly what was going on. And I think what happened, if you go back and look, because it seemed so far out of position. Like, he was trying to stop a shot that was going 3 feet wide. But I think he lost an edge.
Mm-hmm.
I think he pushed left, and then he went to push back right, and it didn't happen. And that's why he wound up so far to the left and out of the crease. But anyway, you know, he said he knew exactly what the fans were chanting. And, it was a pretty special moment. Just like JT said earlier in the season, and like Connor Garland said a couple of weeks ago when the fans were chanting his name as well.
So speaking of, like, fan excitement and energy in the building and everything, this is the great thing about the playoffs, is because, you know, you get your games in Vancouver, 9 years of pent up whatever exploding in games one and games two, and then you go to Nashville where it's going to be very loud and raucous. Set the scene for us here, Shorty. I know you've been in town for a couple days, and I know they've been in practice at the arena, and they've got the smash car outside and everything else. Set the scene for the listeners as we get ready for game three in Nashville.
Well, the Predators have just taken the ice. So I'm standing in Ridgestone Arena in the entrance to section 114, which is just below the pole, which you remember used to be like a Gillette Foamy pole, I think. Now it's for Vanderbilt Health.
We don't need the scene set this much.
No, this is good.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a wordsmith. I see Darren Pang from TNT walking in. Jeff Patterson's here representing Rickwide. I see Noah from the Daily Hives. I see two reporters from The Athletic, Armin Dial and Thomas Grant.
Okay, now let the crowd do it.
And now a layout. That's what we call it in the industry, layout. Look, there's a good buzz here. But there's a buzz because it's Nashville. There's so much going on. Tim McGraw was here last night. The Nashville Marathon goes on the weekend. I think Morgan Wallen's playing three shows here next week. So hotels are at a premium. And if you haven't been to Nashville lately, hotels is the key word. This place has exploded.
Yeah.
Like, it is like the new Vegas. And being treated as such. Like, a lot of bachelorette parties, stags, it's become kind of the new Vegas. And to be here for a playoff series, the buzz is pretty positive.
What do the Canucks have to do tonight to get the win?
Score more than the Predators, Jason.
Yeah, that's why you're the best, buddy.
You're the best.
What have you seen in terms of them just struggling to get their shots through? Does Shorty have any ideas?
Well, Dave does. You know, he's more of the X's and O's guys than I am, but it's almost like they have to front the front, you know? And one of the questions I asked in the scrum with Rick yesterday was, you know, the Suter goal in game one, is that kind of the blueprint? Because they were stacked. Suter was the high man. There was another Canuck behind him. I think it was Miller. And Hughes shoots, and it's the high man who gets the tip because he's in front of the defender. And I don't know, like, as I'm not a hockey guy in that sense, I don't know specifically what the strategy would be to recreate that on, you know, a regular basis. But I think, like Rick said yesterday in answering Ian McIntyre's question, it's a will thing. Like, they need to battle for their position. And, you know, the Nashville players may want to front them and get to the puck before it gets to the Canucks or the goaltender. But the Canucks have a say in that, right? They can determine the outcome of that battle by out-battling the Nashville Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think that's, you know, Rick Tocchet's a cerebral guy. Don't get me wrong. But he's also an old school guy. And, you know, it's the time of year where it is oftentimes a battle of wills. And who wants it more? And if the Canucks want to score goals or at least test UC Saros with their shots, they need to win that space. They need to want it more than the guy defending it. And I think that that's what you can look for tonight. And I'm curious to see as well, with that in mind, Lindholm on the power play, because the power play has gone dry again. Not just the first few games of this series, but it was a little quiet the end of the season. So Lindholm replacing Garland, that's what it looks like on the power play. I'll be curious to see how that pans out.
Game three tonight. Actually, these are both afternoon affairs in my estimation. Game three this afternoon at 4:30. Game four Sunday afternoon at 2:00. Shorty will be on the call for both. Shorty, thanks for doing this, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your time in Nashville and have a good call tonight and Sunday.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks.
See you, Shorty.
John Shorthouse, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Did you ever see the speech that John Tortorella gave the Blue Jackets before they upset the Tampa Bay Lightning?
I have not.
When he went into their room and he said, forget the X's and O's. It's not about X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just saying, like you just, you know, his message was kind of the same thing that Shorty was talking about. Like, you just have to fight. And, you know, one of the famous lines from the Tort speech was, you stand in there and you don't take a expletive backward step.
Right.
And that's kind of what the Canucks may have to do in the offensive zone.
Here's
my
question.
You can't be like floating around on the outside hoping for something to happen. You have to join the fight and battle for ice and battle for space. And if the Preds want to be in the shooting lanes, find a way to get them out of those shooting lanes.
Here's the thing with that,
though. Without getting called for interference.
Right. Or tripping. Yeah. No penalties. I understand that. And I get that. You know, the motivational stuff and, you know, the gladiator quotes and all that. It's great and makes for great theater and it makes for great drama. But is Andrew Burnett not saying the exact same thing to the Nashville Predators players? I think yes. Like, there's no way that he's being second in the will department tonight. We'll be fine. Like,
but certain coaches emphasize X's and O's more than others. And guys like Tortorella, even though they do have X's and O's, and, you know, they do have a game plan. They focus more on the just win your battles, guys. Just find a way.
But I get it. But the fire and brimstone stuff, it's important. It absolutely is. All the cliches hold true in the playoffs. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not doubting that for a moment. At a certain point, it's, you know, sack up, whatever, and get going and beat the other person.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, one puck, two individuals. You be the one that comes out with it. I get all that, right? But
don't undersell that.
I'm not underselling
it. That's a huge part of hockey.
I'm not underselling it.
Yeah.
I think you might be missing the point. I'm not trying to diminish that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is it's very hard to be like, go outwill the other individual, because the other individual's saying the exact same thing.
Well, he may not be emphasizing it as much.
I think every coach is emphasizing it. It's playoff hockey. Like, come on. What do you think Andrew Burnett said to his guys to get them to lay in front of 40 shots?
No. I'm not saying Andrew Burnett isn't doing it. I'm just saying that there are some teams that some coaches that emphasize that more, and I think they get more out of their players by doing that, frankly.
Because I remember, it's funny, because
there are other players that are like, those coaches would have like a nickname like the professor or something like that. He outthinks, as opposed to, you know, he's more of like a brain over brawn guy.
Yep.
And there are some coaches, like, I don't think you can debate that Torts' teams, like, they play harder than others. They do.
Yep.
So you can say that, well, other coaches are telling them to play harder,
mm-hmm.
but they don't always.
Right.
Like, Torts gets teams to play harder.
Mm-hmm. I'm more talking about the philosophical nature of a battle of wills, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And I'm not saying it's good, bad, or otherwise, but you have to acknowledge that when you're talking about the serve and volley nature and the count, the punch counterpunch, right now going into game three, the narrative is clearly defined as the Canucks have to outwill what the Predators did in game two, which was show the bravery and the dedication and the buy-in to block 40 shots, mm-hmm. right? And so that's where it becomes, can you outman, outmuscle, outwork, outdetermine the other team, right? And then if they do it successfully, what happens? It's Nashville's turn to be like, well, now we have to win the battle of wills.
So we got an Ask Us Anything in, into the Dunbar Lumber text line, and I don't have it right in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase this. It was about hockey cliches, which ones you like and which ones you hate. One of the ones I like and I think is totally appropriate for the playoffs is you have to battle for every inch of the ice. It does change. There is a different feeling in the playoffs. And I think that's probably what Rick Tocchet is getting at. So the exchange yesterday that Shorty was talking about with IMAC, IMAC asked a question, I'm going to paraphrase this again. He said, is one way to disrupt the Preds when they're in the shooting lanes is to get there yourself and be in that spot as well, because you can move out of the way,
sure,
right at the last minute. So if you win that battle for that spot on the ice, and you almost push your guy out of the shooting lane, and you take, and then Taka looked over him and said, "Bingo."
Yeah,
and he was like, "I think he made some comment." He's like, "You should be a coach or something like that." And IMAC was like, "So proud of himself." Yeah.
Thank you, Rick.
So that's going to be interesting to watch. And I think that's one of the reasons that Lindholm is out there on the power play. And I think it'll be interesting to watch guys try and battle with the Preds for those shooting lanes. And don't just let them have that ice. Because sometimes it's tempting to let them have that ice. They're like, okay, you stand there. I'll go over here and try and, you know, get open for a pass or something. But in some ways, what Taka might be asking his guys to do is just be like, mix it up with those guys and get them out of the shooting lanes.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Rick Dhaliwal. Rick Dhaliwal. It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Dhali.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Dhali.
Rick Dhaliwal.
It's time for Rick Dhaliwal.
Rick Dhaliwal.
8:02 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dhaliwal family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dhaliwal difference today by visiting your nearest Dhaliwal Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Have you got sore feet? What are you waiting for?
I do have sore feet, and I'm waiting for Kintech.
Well, just go. Like, why are you waiting for it?
Well, they're not open yet.
Oh, well, they're not going to visit your house.
I know. And I take naps during the day. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show.
How are we going to make this happen?
Yeah. Dang it. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Friendly reminder that we are hosting a watch party. That's right. Sunday, 2 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in the heart of Greekton, Kitsilano. West Broadway. Go check them out. HollywoodTheater.ca. I will remind you all, I did this morning as well, that as this thing grows in popularity and more people show up, we may get to a point where ticket holders get priority access. You can get tickets. They're easy to get. And what's more, they're free. They cost $0. Go to HollywoodTheater.ca. There's a show pass link. You can get them. You can sign up for them. I don't know. I guess our next guest can't be in attendance because he'll be busy working. They got a post-game show on Sunday. Joining us now, Rick Dhaliwal here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Rick?
Gentlemen, let's go. Let's go. It's Friday.
I'm just rattled because you come in so hot. Okay, Rick, Thatcher Demko. We've heard some reports that he might be out for the playoffs. We've heard other reports that say he might be back for the next round. Other reports that say he might be ready for the Western Conference Final. What are you hearing?
Boy, oh boy. So you are correct, Jason. It's all over the map. I have to be honest with you. You are correct. It is all. You know, I was talking to Elliot Freeman last night. This is no different than the Nylander injury in Toronto. Same thing. They had Nylander with 500 different injuries and 500 different time frames. So the report last night that Demko was done for the playoffs, I certainly checked last night and double-checked this morning. I'm still being told he's week to week. Talked to numerous people last night and this morning. No one is saying he's done for the playoffs. We can only report what we are hearing at a certain time. And certainly things change hourly, but still hearing week to week. It's all. You can only say, Jason, what you're hearing and what you're being told. The Canucks could have easily announced he was done for the year because they've had ample time to diagnose what he's got. And it's been let's say it's been almost a week, and they've had ample time to come out and say, hey, look, he's done for the year. Instead, they said week to week. It is a fluid situation. As with all injuries, things change daily and weekly. A lot of it is wait and see. So if he is done for the season, I find it interesting. Why would they take him to Nashville? But yesterday morning when I checked on Demko, a lot of people were really positive that he did travel and that he can walk. The fact he can travel and walk is a good sign. We'll see what the Canucks say this morning. Obviously, I think that Tocchet will be asked about it. Clearly, he's not going to play in the Nashville series, but there are people who think he could play late second round, early third round. People ask if Demko needs surgery. I'm told no. There's been no medical procedures on him, so far since the injury in Game 1. Innocent-looking play with 48 seconds left in Game 1. Some are calling it a fluke injury, and the fluke the way it happened, and fluke is the what he ended up with. So there you go. It is, like you said, Jason, all over the map, no question. Let's see what the Canucks say this morning, but we've heard everything from short-term, mid-term to long-term. It has certainly been an interesting 5-6 days since he got hurt.
Is it in any way related to the injury that kept him out in the latter stages of the regular season?
Well, since it is the same knee, you got to think. And there's a lot of questions right now. Was he 100% healed from the first knee injury that kept him out 5 weeks? Is he injury prone now? Did they overplay him in February? Canucks played 13 games in 24 days, 8 on the road, and Demko played 11 of those, including one in Chicago, which no one can figure out why would you play against Chicago. Also, that month, they went to the All-Star game in Toronto, and the day after departed for a game in Carolina. A lot of people are saying that, you know, this isn't the exact same injury, that it is the same knee, but not the exact same injury that the night he got hurt, the Saturday night against Winnipeg. So, but you talk to goalie people, and goalie people say, how can it not be related? Like goalie coaches will say to you, like you talk to goalie coaches, and they say, well, how can he be injure a knee 5 weeks, he's out, and then he re-injures the same knee? How could it not? I mean, that can't be a coincidence, can it?
No.
You know, I mean, so the big question right now, and there's a lot of them, did they overplay him? Was he 100%? So these are the things that everyone wants to know. And the Canucks aren't going to come out and say all this stuff in the middle of a playoff series. But you're going to have to wait till the end of the regular season. The end of the playoffs, whenever the playoffs end. And then the Canucks can give a detailed description of what happened to Demko. I don't think you're going to get it in the middle of a playoff series. But here's another one for you. Knowing your starting goaltender just had back-to-back knee injuries, the importance of a solid backup is front and center for the Canucks when it comes to next season. You can't cheap out in the backup position. You can't have a goalie under $1 million. They will attempt to re-sign Casey DeSmith, and that's the right call. We know that DeSmith and Demko, they have a good friendship, and they say they share the same agent, but it makes sense to bring them back. But it really makes you think about how they got to think going forward next year, knowing Demko, whether he's out, whether he's going to come back. It makes you think that coming off of back-to-back knee injuries, your starting goaltender, boy, you better have a good veteran guy in there next year.
I was my ears perked up a little bit the other day when Rick Tocchet name dropped Nikita Zadorov as one of the leaders on the team and one of the guys that you love having in the room when you're facing a little bit of adversity, because he's a confident guy, he's a funny guy, and he keeps things light. I think most Canucks fans have been pretty impressed with Nikita Zadorov's play in these first two games. Big, physical. He's thrown some really big hits. What do you think the plan for Nikita Zadorov is in Vancouver? Can the Canucks afford to re-sign this guy?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And the other problem the Canucks have, Myers, UFA, Hronek's RFA, asking for a huge raise. Ian Cole, who they really like and has got the most playoff experience for the Canucks by a long shot, he's a UFA. So really, they've got, when this season's over, they got some major decisions to make. First of all, on Zadorov, the big hits, the defending teammates, Gordon Game 2, he's such a big presence on the ice. When you elevate your game in the playoffs and you're a UFA, it's going to make your agent really happy. Pro scouts are, you know, obviously watching these and watching what UFAs are doing in the good in the playoffs. After Zadorov scored in Game 2, you saw Dan Milstein tweeting the money sign again. He does that for a reason. There's no question. He does it for a reason. Milstein's going to get his client paid. He should fetch $5 million plus on the market, whether it's in Vancouver or elsewhere, Jason. That's got to be determined. He's also, I'm going to tell you right now, Milstein is looking for a big term. And we're not talking 3 or 4 years. He's looking for term. He's in a good spot, the agent, because there's going to be numerous teams after Zadorov. I think I heard you guys mention Toronto earlier this week. Well, their GM loves not only Zadorov, but he loves Chris Tanev. He had both of them in Calgary. I still maintain that if Zadorov was a right shot, he'd have been signed by now by the Canucks. No question in my mind. And you mentioned Tocchet raving about Zadorov this week. It is going to be interesting to see Tocchet's reaction if Zadorov leaves and the Canucks can't, for whatever reason, afford him. Tocchet is a huge reason why the Canucks built the size on the blue line the way they did. And when you, I know you guys get guests on, we get guests on our show. One of the first things a lot of our hockey guests say to us is, love the Canucks blue line, love the size on the blue line. That's the blue line you want, size-wise, aggressiveness-wise, in the playoffs. So it's going to be really interesting with Myers, Cole, and Zadorov UFAs, and then you got the headache with Hronek. And I heard you guys talking about Hronek earlier this week, and I think, Bruff, you said he could be traded if he can't come to terms on a new deal, and I can't agree with you more. Sometimes players will price themselves out of a market. Bo Horvat did that in Vancouver. We know what happened there. If he's looking for $8 million and the Canucks were okay with $8 million, he'd have been signed by now. I just don't see a world where the Canucks are going to give this guy $8 million. So Zadorov is a guy I'm seeing a lot on Twitter, you know, re-sign him, re-sign him, re-sign him. I think a lot of fans would like to see that, but it's just going to be a whole lot harder than people imagine.
I was watching the Hurricanes game yesterday, and they were talking about all the decisions that Carolina has to make on their blue line. And one of the announcers, now I'm not endorsing this, but he said it's really going to be the season of free agent defensemen, or the offseason of free agent defensemen. He brought up the name Jalen Chatfield, and one of the announcers, I can't remember who it was, said, you know, that got a right shot defenseman. He might be a $3 or $4 million player. And I kind of like, what? Jalen Chatfield, but, you know, like right shot defenseman that can that played pretty well for Carolina. I don't know if he's going to stick with the Hurricanes, but I could see him getting a decent contract. What have you heard about Chatfield?
Oh, lots, because his agent, he tried to get a deal done with Carolina, and they just couldn't get the numbers to work. And that's a guy, if the Canucks are stuck, and let's say you sign Zadorov, and now you need help on the right side. That's a guy like Jalen Chatfield went in there. You got to remember, Ethan Bear didn't work with Rob Brind'Amour, but for some reason, Jalen Chatfield had no problem getting ice under Rob Brind'Amour. And we had Rob Brind'Amour on the show earlier this season. He raved about Chatfield. Like, he just said, look, he's a big guy, he can skate, right shot, and he's very dedicated in the offseason. I think, Jason, you make a really good point. I think that guy, if the Canucks lose Myers, I wouldn't be surprised if they go and look at a guy like that at all. And you're right. He's not going to cost you $5, $6 million, but he's going to cost you $2 to $3, $3.5 million for sure. And, he most likely is going to hit the free agent market, and I think he'll do just fine on that market.
This is a bit of a tough question to ask, but what do you think management and ownership is thinking when they watch Elias Pettersson play right now, given how much term and money they've committed to this guy, and he appears to be having trouble with the pressure of the playoffs?
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is you get the money he got to be a difference maker, and then you're in a Canadian market, and then you sign the big contract, and then the expectations go up, and he knows that. He knows the day he signed that deal, he knew expectations were going to go through the roof. He knew that. But you just be the difference maker. That's all. He's got, what, one goal in his last 15 games. I know he had attempted shots. None got through. He missed the empty net with 3 seconds left. That could have changed the face of the game. Look, he knows it. The Canucks know it. The coaching staff knows it. He's got to be a difference maker. And, you know, people ask me if Pettersson's injured. I wouldn't say, per se, he's got one injury that is so blatantly obvious, but he may have bumps and bruises like all the other players have after 82-game schedule. Like, I mean, if they finish this series or whatever, how far they go. And, you know, after every series, they announce all the guys that were injured, and then there's a laundry list of 6, 7, 8, 9 guys that are banged up, and then you hear about it. Is he injured? I haven't been told he's injured. But is he 100%? Is Brock Besser 100%? He didn't go to Winnipeg for the final regular season game. You know, Hronek, some people think, is hurt. There's a lot of guys playing banged up. I'm not hearing he's got, like, a designated name injury, but would it surprise me if he's banged up? No, it wouldn't. But the injury aside, if you're out there, you're playing, the difference maker, just be that difference maker. That's the reason you got 11.6. But yeah, I think management probably wants more from him. I think the coaching staff does. And let's be honest, you can't advance in the playoffs without your best players being the best players night in and night out. But before look, he's not the only one, Jason. Miller, Besser, Hoglander, Garland, no goals. I mean, that's got to change. They've got one goal from their top six, and that's from Pia Suter, and that was a deflection from a Quinn Hughes shot. So, look, he's not the only one, but he's the most high-profile one because you just got the contract. There's a lot of people right now, the expectations, but he's the guy. I mean, but there's others. Miller, Besser, Hoglander, Garland. If you would have told me after 2 games at home all those guys would have 0 goals, I'd have a tough time believing that.
All right, Rick. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be. I feel like we kind of get.
How can you enjoy this weekend with this stupid rain?
I can enjoy it by watching 2 playoff hockey games.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know what? I feel like we're getting ripped off, though, because, like, on Monday, will we even talk about the Friday game? Because there's the game on Sunday. So we kind of get screwed out of a game.
When I first saw the schedule for the series come out, I did not like the Friday-Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like,
I demand to have my opinion heard on every game.
That's right.
Yes, I agree.
I'll have to take to Twitter or something.
Let me get this in. Yep. Donnie Dolly postgame tonight. Check. Let's go. Bye.
See you, Rick. Thanks, buddy. That's Rick Dollywall yelling at us on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're going to do What We Learns and Ask Us Anything's coming up. I'm going to start because there's something that just came down about 5 or 6 hours ago. It's way off the board, but I think it's important. Okay? And it is soccer, but it's not really just about soccer. So Sweden, the Swedish Football Association and the top leagues in Sweden have made the decision to not use VAR.
Ooh.
Yeah. They have made a decision after numerous clubs voiced their opposition to the technology to not implement it moving forward. So they have the technology. They have the cameras and the staff and the replay crew and the booths. They have everything you need to do VAR. They're just not going to do VAR.
Mm-hmm.
This is very interesting because the Swedish league, for those that are unaware of
how the Allsvenskan works. That's the Swedish football top flight. Oh, all the leagues, actually. There's a requirement that all the teams have to be at least 51% owned by the fans.
Okay.
Like that sort of Green Bay Packers-ish type thing. Anyway, so there's a real voice of the people in that league and in that federation.
Bunch of commies.
Right?
Socialism.
God. Look at Sweden. It looks like a nightmare there.
Well, this took a turn. I figured it was going to. Anyway, I think it's fascinating because someone is now, like, and they say what you know, it's like, oh, the Swedish soccer league, who cares? It's a statement that someone acknowledges that the technology is out there, they can use it, they can implement it, and they're choosing not to do it. I don't know if this will work, because the first controversial call that they have,
yeah,
people are going to say, well, we should be reviewing this. But it's a super interesting decision, because I've always said, you can't unring the bell and you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Once it's out, it's out. But they're trying to do it. Like, and good on them, because these games are televised. And the one thing I've always also said is that it's really hard to put your officials in a situation, a compromised situation, where they're making a call, and one of my favorite phrases, in real time, and they're left to their own eyes and devices, and you've got a camera that can very clearly show if they got the call right or wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to look like either, but I think it's a pretty bold decision to say, you know what? We can do VAR. We're just choosing not to do it.
Yeah, and if imagine if they were to take instant replay out of hockey now.
It'd be a fascinating scenario. I don't know what it would look like, but it would be fascinating.
But there is the technology, and there's so many cameras on the game now. And the broadcast would almost be obligated to go back and look at those plays. It's not like, I mean, we were talking about the passing of Bob Cole earlier today. When I was going back and watching some of his old calls, you know, going back into the 80s and even the early 90s, like the quality of the picture and the broadcast, it's not there, right?
It's a lot different.
So remember that controversial play in the Flames Lightning game? In the Stanley Cup final, where the Flames were convinced they had scored. Was that it?
Yep.
Game six. Yeah. Right. And that would have, like, won the cup, right?
Yeah.
Was that a Marty Jelena goal?
That's right.
Okay. How much better do you think the technology would be now for that? Would we have a, like, because that's always been like, well, we'll never know for sure. You think we'd know for sure now?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. I would say so. And I would say that you would, in a very weird and twisted way, have gotten it right, but you would have eliminated the lore and the folklore of it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you remember that game because of that non-call, because of that wrong call.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, I don't want to say romantic about it, but it is baked into old, you know, the Marty McSorley stick penalty. I mean, that's a little bit different.
But that's different. But
that's been it's knocked out of the game now. You don't do that. You bring out the ruler, the big stupid ruler on the bench. But all those
should.
The missed high stick, the Gretzky high stick on Gilmore. Like all those things, they do add an element of drama that maybe it isn't the right way to do it because you're missing technically what you should be getting right on the ice in this instance. But I remember talking to
it is a question of how far you should you go to get everything right, because, you know,
no, it's fair.
Like, are you going to start reviewing every offside call, even ones that don't lead to a goal? Because if you believe in that whole notion of, like, you know, a butterfly flaps its wings on the other side of the world and, you know, whatever. I don't know what the saying is. I don't want a George W. Bush myself.
The butterfly effect.
But yeah, that sort of thing, right? Yeah. Like, you could say, like, well, you know, if you go back 10 steps after that missed offside call, like if that had been called offside, then the game wouldn't have gone like
exactly.
It would have, right? Like, so how far do we really want to go here with replay? And I think in some cases it's gone too far, but I also understand that, and this was always Gary Bettman's, like, you say what you will about Gary Bettman, he's actually, except in the case of Arizona hockey, he's pretty good at predicting the future.
Yes.
He was like, all right, I'm going to go along with this, but I'm telling you, there will be consequences for this.
Unintended consequences, too. Stuff he didn't expect, stuff he didn't foresee, except for Gary Bettman. Except in Arizona.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.